Everybody, welcome back to the show. It's your host, Stuart Cranes, and I'm really, really excited about having this guest on today. So this is somebody that I think for those of you listening that are interested in starting a nonprofit, having that type of impact in the world, but maybe don't know where to start, this is somebody that has been in nonprofit work for really my entire life. And I can't think of anybody better to jump in and share with you the wisdom that he's created, really, guys, and just figuring out how to do it as he went along. And full disclosure, this man is my father, but I couldn't be more thrilled to have him on the show and share his expertise. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Paul Cranes to the show.
Thank you, Stu.
Awesome. And I'm going to call you dad the rest of the way because it's just going to mess me up if I go anywhere else with it. But
okay. But
just to kick this off, like, again, thanks for being on today. I'd love to hear a bit more about what had you interested in starting a nonprofit. And if you could just give the listeners the background on how that came to be.
Sure. I was a county employee for 43 years. I was originally an accountant and managed to become the director of the county senior nutrition program. I became director in about 81 or two. And we had just inherited Meals on Wheels under federal law, funding for Meals on Wheels. And originally we didn't have a lot of funding. And so we just funded meals to existing Meals on Wheels providers. There were about six in our county. And what we were trying to do was add meals. Eventually, a number of the providers dropped out. They just weren't interested. They figured if we were there, they didn't have to work so hard, and they gave it up. And so we were down to about three providers, and we still had large areas of the county that weren't served. And each of the providers had waiting lists. Now, Meals on Wheels, I'm talking just strictly to Meals on Wheels. Meals on Wheels provides meals to homebound, mainly elders, who have no other means of receiving a daily nutritious meal. So it's fairly critical stuff for the people that are served by the program. The federal funding for the program had been growing in the 80s, and then it just towards the end of the 80s flattened out. Mm-hmm. And yet the need of homebound elders for meals, again, it was growing throughout the county in the areas that were being served, and there were areas that weren't being served. So there were people just not getting anything. So working with my advisory council, we got talking about setting up a nonprofit for to raise money for meals, nothing else. And the problem was, of course, I was working for the county and I was a county employee, and I did not want to set it up under the county,
right?
Because the county funding always seemed to be on a roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want some future boss or some future member of our board of supervisors to decide that was their money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, we had no idea that we could raise, how much money we could raise. But I realized after a while that our advisory council, which was made up of seniors who were part of the senior nutrition program, really weren't very sophisticated, and it wasn't going to work that way. And to truly keep it outside of the county government, I was going to have an independent board of directors. And so, and then there was a third element involved, which was my supervisor didn't particularly want me to do it. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, it just wasn't her thing. And she didn't want me to be spending my time on it and so forth. So I began looking into how do you set up a nonprofit? I have no knowledge of anything really, other than I'd been a member of various organizations that were nonprofits, but I hadn't set them up. Mm-hmm. And so I did two things. One, I found a book on how to set up a nonprofit, and it was particular to California. But more to the point, the IRS had a very nice publication on how a nonprofit should be set up, including sample bylaws, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So over the course of a year, really, I spent after work time writing a set of bylaws, still not real sure how I was going to organize this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, the nonprofits I worked with in my job were concerned that I was trying to put them out of business.
Wow.
One of the things I didn't mention was these nonprofits were doing fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
Their names were not Meals on Wheels, the nonprofits. They had community services related names, and Meals on Wheels was one of their programs. Well, what they weren't doing was raising much of anything in the way of money for meals. And that was what we needed. Meals. And so that's what we wanted to set up a nonprofit to do, nothing but fund meals. So anyway, working over the course of a year and trying to figure out how to configure this thing so that it wouldn't be owned by the county.
Right.
And yet I could participate in it.
Yeah.
I found a board of directors, including members of the County Advisory Council on Aging and the Senior Nutrition Program Advisory Council and various senior groups around the county that were a little more sophisticated than the people that we served. And I got the director of the county office on aging to serve as basically the president of our board. Yeah. The reason is that he was well known throughout the county. He provided funding to all these programs, including the ones that I contracted with. And so they knew and trusted him, and they knew he wasn't going to be trying to put them out of business.
Yeah.
So it was, I wasn't sure he'd agree to do it, but he wanted to see more meals being served in the county as much as I did. And so that helped. And when I went to him with the problem, he agreed with me that was one of the best solutions.
Can I pause you right there? Because everything you're saying is awesome, and I appreciate you sharing the story, but I want to highlight some of the stuff that you've said and sharing your story with the listeners, just to make sure that they understand what I'm picking up on, some of the nuggets here as well. Okay. So in the story of how the nonprofit came to be, you've shared that you saw a need, which in this case was the meals. You saw that there was not the adequate funding for the meals to meet the demand that was in place. And I think what's really, I think, powerful about your story is not only did you see the need, but you took the committed actions that you saw were necessary in order to solve the problem. And from what you're sharing thus far, and absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm hearing you say, and again, trying to make this applicable to anybody listening, you did the research, you did the homework, you went above and beyond doing it on your own time after work so that you could, you know, find the resources, find people that would be bought in with you. You found somebody to help you champion the cause who already had the sphere of influence necessary to get things pushed through. And obviously, you know, being a part of a county government, like that's a pretty bureaucratic system, I think we can agree. But you did all of the things that are often roadblocks for people. So I just wanted to highlight that. It's a lot of the consistent committed action that we talk about on this show, and also asking for help when it's needed. And, you know, I'm just wondering, do you have anything to add to that? Otherwise, I'd love to hear the rest of the story.
I want to be very clear. I had no clue what I was doing.
Right.
I really didn't. I've been very committed to fake it until you make it type of thing.
Right.
But yes, I think what you're saying is, you know, correct. But what we were looking at the time was we wanted to raise money. Our goal in life was to raise a couple of thousand a year. Mm-hmm. And we did much better than that in a few years. Our first year, that's what we did. But anyway, so we set up a nonprofit. We meet. Oh, the other piece I wanted to go to mention was you never underestimate the value of, even in this day and age, of clubs like Rotary, Kiwanis, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, those are clubs of people that are, in the old days, it was each town had their own and it was all the business people. Now it's a lot of retirees looking for something to keep busy. And so they are groups that get together to do community services. Mm-hmm. And it really pays to be a member of one of these groups. And I'll tell you why. I need an attorney at this point to look over what I've done.
Wow.
I've now written, based on the IRS guidelines, which really were almost a fill in the blank, you know? Name here, you know, and to get something that's legal. But of course, you also have to meet state regulations, because what you're really doing is setting up a corporation, and corporations are governed by the state. Before I go into the social club aspect, let me back up and say, what you're doing is you're setting up a corporation. Mm-hmm. That requires the Secretary of State's office, and in some cases, the State Attorney General's office, filing. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to ask the state, based on the papers you've submitted, articles of incorporation and bylaws to take a look at. You're going to ask, in California, it's the Franchise Tax Board. So you go to them to get them to look at it and say, yes, this qualifies to be a nonprofit. And all of these things have specific filing rules, but they're all online.
Yeah.
You know, in 1990, when I did this, it was a lot more sketchy, you know, to try to find something online.
Sure.
In fact, it was non-existent, really.
Yeah.
But anyway, then the final step is, you've now created a California corporation. You've gotten it approved to be not for profit. Now you need to create it, assuming you're creating a charitable nonprofit. Now you have to go to the IRS.
Right.
And get a determination letter from the IRS. And that actually proved to take the most time. Yeah, they tend to have. They have so many weeks to respond, they take that period of time. And, you know, you go on the bottom of the pile and you work your way up and there and reveal it. But if you're, you know, doing something that is obviously of charitable nature, we were feeding people, you know?
Yeah, correct.
There's any number of charitable activities, but, you know, housing people, whatever. Then they're going to give you your determination letter. Once you have those three items, now you're in business. You can go forth and try to raise money for the public. Backing up to what I was saying about service clubs, that's the word I couldn't come up with. Service clubs like Rotary, Kiwanis, Lions, you know, figure out which one's the most, probably has the most members in your town and join it.
Yeah.
You have other members of your newly found board of directors who live in other nearby towns, have them join theirs. Because the one thing you're going to need is help.
Yeah.
And one of the things I got out of that was, when I came up with this whole idea of setting up a nonprofit in our town, I actually went to one of the members of our Kiwanis Club was the public relations man for Shell Oil.
Oh, wow.
Shell Oil refinery in our city. And I just went to him because I knew he gave out grants to nonprofits. And he worked with a lot of nonprofits. And I called him and said, I wonder if you'd sit down and tell, I want to run an idea by you. And I'm not asking for money. I just want to know if it makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Try to do. Now, the reason I did that was because I'm a county employee setting up a nonprofit outside the county, you know, and I wanted to know, as somebody that gives out grants, would that throw up red flags for you? Or could you, you know, you're okay because of what we're doing with the money, which is only buying meals. We weren't going to have any employees. Eventually, we did have to hire, you know, staff.
Sure.
To manage all the volume of paper that comes and goes and so forth. But so I went to him. And then I also, we had attorneys in the club. You'll almost always have attorneys. And I asked one if he would take a look at my paperwork and see if he had any suggestions. And he did. And if he had said no, I would have gone to the next attorney in the club and asked him, but I went to the friendliest one. I had been in the club for about 5 years by then. But anyway, he actually found something in what I wrote, in how I set up the board, or how I was proposing to set up the board, basically. And he said, if you do it, tweak it this way instead of that way, it will take less time to get it done. And here's why.
In the wording?
Yeah. It was instead of calling ourselves the board, call ourselves the incorporators.
Mm.
Now that was California law at that time.
Sure.
But he told me it would get us through the process quicker. So these people are invaluable. Otherwise, they liked everything I'd done. Of course, I had copied everything out of the IRS book and my book on setting up a nonprofit corporation in California.
And for those of you listening right now, like, obviously my dad here did this all in California. Absolutely go on the web, look up irs.gov. I'm sure all of these resources are now available online, and also your state government website as well, like ohio.gov or new york.gov, whatever your current living situation is, be sure that you are looking up these materials, because they're all there. You just got to go get them. Anyway, continue on with the story for sure.
I would also look to see if there is a book on how to set up a corporation in your state.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was invaluable. And I'll tell you a little aside. In those days, you know, the book was this thick, and it went through how to set up bylaws, how to set up whatever. And again, you could type them and just fill in the blanks, but you had to type them.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one of these books a couple of years ago. Now they come with CDs in them with everything, all the forms already laid out. All you have to do is, you honestly only have to fill in the blanks.
With could your, be that easy, y'all.
yeah. Scary how times have changed with the internet and with, I mean, there were no CDs when I did this.
Yeah.
Not for data that I know of. You know, I mean, there was CD players for music.
Of course.
Anyway, so we set up the nonprofit, we get we start raising funds. One of the things I did was I went back to the guy that was at Shell and asked if he was willing to ask some of his friends to give us a helping hand to getting off the ground. And he was. And so we worked together, but he basically wrote a letter to half dozen people.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them gave us $100. At that, in 1990, that was a lot more money than it is now.
Sure.
And they were all pretty, you know, I mean, they were people that had means.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I, you know, I never could have done that out of the hole. And so that gave us some. Oh, by the way, all the filing fees and so forth, when we set up this nonprofit, that came out of my pocket.
Wow. Talk about having skin in the game.
We really honestly couldn't afford it. But at the time, it was only about, I think we were only out about $350. But at the time, that was a lot of money. And my wife tolerated it.
Shout out to all the supportive spouses out there.
Yeah, really. Got to tell you. So where did we go from here? Now we had to actually do something with this. Well, one of the things I was really interested in, because I worked for the county, and the county had workplace giving. You know, they did a little campaign every year, was somehow push within the workplace giving that there was a nonprofit in the county that benefited Meals on Wheels and was set up by county employees. And that took going and getting involved in the campaign at the county level for everybody and getting to know who was involved and getting them to let me send out a letter. And I did. And it got us a little bit of money. And all in all, the first year we brought in $2,000 and we were thrilled.
Yeah, got to start somewhere, right?
I wanted to talk about naming your corporation.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Harry's,
but this is something a lot of people don't think about.
Absolutely. People love to do these cutesy names. And if your cutesy name doesn't tell somebody who you are in the first couple of words, you've killed yourself right out of the gate. And here's the prime example. And I over the years, a few years after I got going, I was asked to serve on the board of Local Independent Charities of America. And it's now called America's Best Local Charities. I'm still on the board. I'm trying to think. We may have a chapter in Ohio. I don't know. But anyway, what I won't get into their history, but their history is, or what they do is get local charities into workplace giving, and in the state and federal employees are given the opportunity to give through their paycheck. And they want this way, you're not just major charities getting a piece of the action, but if I'm an employee and I want to give to my church and it has a nonprofit auxiliary, I can give it to that group through, you know, this, if they join.
Yep. You know,
if that group joins Local Independent Charities, or now America's Best Local Charities, then they would be listed in the catalog that goes to all these state and federal employees also. Anyway, and it works. It worked more. I mean, workplace giving isn't as big as it once was because of the internet, but it still can bring in a fair amount of money, particularly if you go to your people at, you know, your congregation, for instance, at a church, and are able to say, you know, if you work for the county or you work for the state, you can give to us through your workplace. And the value, the great value of that is you want to give $100 a year to your charity, but you can't really afford to write a check for $100. You can't afford to have $10 a month taken out of your check.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what workplace giving does for you. So here's the importance of a name. Elizabeth Taylor Maybe your audience is too young to know who that is. But at one time, she was considered the sexiest actress in the world. Anyway, she was particularly interested in the AIDS issue in the early 80s because of Rock Hudson, who was a good friend of hers, who ended up dying of AIDS.
Right.
And she actually got involved long before he died. I mean, she was promoting, AIDS research and giving. So she set up a nonprofit and she called it the National Association of whatever AIDS research. I don't remember what she called it. Well, the reason I was telling you about local independent charities was the guy who managed that, along with other groups, had a company called McGuire. And she joined the national group where we had local independent charities. There was independent charities in America. So she joined that with her nonprofit. And he said, Patrick said to her, Patrick's passed on now, but he really knew his stuff. Patrick McGuire said to her, why on earth did you name it national? Said, when your donors go looking for you, they're not looking for national. They're looking for AIDS.
Wow.
So her first year of business, she raised, now this is Elizabeth Taylor, one of the most famous actresses of all time.
Yeah.
She raised $250,000.
Pretty
well,
good.
She was disappointed. Well, she was pretty disappointed. Yeah, for you and I, not for Elizabeth Taylor.
Right. It's all relative, but keep going. Yeah.
So she was a little disappointed in that. So he told her, no, you have to name it AIDS Foundation of whatever you want to call it. You know, it has to have the name of what you're doing up front. For instance, my nonprofit is Meals on Wheels of Contra Costa, which is Contra Costa's county I live in. So she renamed it AIDS Foundation of whatever, or, AIDS Research Foundation, something. But she put AIDS in front of the name. The next year, she made $4
million. Wow.
I'm talking about just off of workplace giving.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, she made more than $250,000 in Hollywood alone, I'm sure. She was totally disappointed with her workplace giving results because it's her,
Yeah, got it.
And thought there was more interest in AIDS than that. Now there's a list like that of agencies that deal with AIDS. Then there was not.
And of course.
So she was the big one and only raised that $250,000. So that is the value of the name.
Yeah.
You're doing something with children, put children up front. You're doing something with the homeless, put homeless at the front of the name and leave the off of it, especially in the days of internet when people do a search, they're going to search homeless, not the homeless.
So just to make sure I'm really laying this out for people, you're saying Homeless Coalition of Ohio instead of the Homeless Coalition of Ohio.
Or Ohio Homeless Coalition would be horrible.
Got it.
People aren't going to search for Ohio. They're going to search for homeless. And nowadays, search engines are better, but, in the old days, but this is even before the days of search engines. This is even catalog, this is the days of catalogs.
Yeah.
When this occurred in the 80s with the AIDS Foundation, and people were looking for AIDS. They weren't looking for national.
Yeah.
So that's a lesson to be learned when you name a nonprofit, or particularly a charitable nonprofit.
Talking about the story of like Elizabeth Taylor's nonprofit, and also what you were sharing about how you got Meals on Wheels of Contra Costa off the ground. You were talking a lot about workplace giving. In your experience, where are the number one sources of giving? Like, how do people give now in this day and age?
Well, I'm a little bit dated, but still, everybody's looking at, trying to do things on Facebook and the internet and all of the modern, resources, and still direct mail actually is still number one.
Really?
I don't know how much longer it will be, but it is. Direct mail is expensive.
Okay.
If you have the cost of postage, you have the cost of printing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the cost of getting names, because you have to fish for donors.
Sure.
But in the end, it's where you get the most donors and the most repeat donors. The good news is, when you do direct mail nowadays, you can offer them the opportunity, the people that donate, the opportunity to donate online or through whatever electronic means you wish. They don't have to write a check and mail it, although sure, that's still, believe it or not, the preferred method of direct mail giving. And that could be because direct mail donors tend to be older. And in April, I'll probably hear an update on whether that's still true or not.
Right.
We have a direct mail provider. But yeah, there's a story associated with that. And that's, I listened to a local nonprofit go on about how they couldn't afford direct mail because there's a lot of upfront costs in printing, postage. Somebody's got to write the copy. You got to know what you're doing. And I would say, if you're going to get into direct mail, look at the direct mail fundraising pieces you get in the mail.
Yeah.
All of them, and see how they do it. Because that's your key for how to do it. Most of those people know what they're doing. I would particularly say, look at food banks.
Yeah.
My Meals on Wheels nonprofit, the one I helped found, still uses, or we're part of a coalition of Meals on Wheels providers who all use the same letter, and we modify it for our own county because it saves us a lot of money. Marketing firm that basically puts it out for us. And we share client stories and volunteer stories and that sort of thing. And that's what you're seeing. And while it's a true story, and that's, by the way, that's critical. Don't ever lie.
Yeah.
Tell the truth.
Don't start a nonprofit and be shady about it, guys.
Yeah,
for anybody
don't
listening.
Lie about who you serve or how many you serve, or because believe me, it'll come out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, how I did it was, yes, it's expensive to get involved. I actually got a grant from an agency specifically to fund. It was amazing how interested people are in helping you raise money from other people.
Interesting. So
giving you a one-time grant to seed something like that is attractive to a lot of nonprofits. We have a major nonprofit in this county, and that's all they'll fund. They don't want to fund services because it's endless, right?
Yeah, of course.
All the money.
Million
they want
causes
to help
out
you
there.
Find other funding resources that you can tap endlessly. And so they would be, you know, perfect in my county to set up a nonprofit or to set up a fundraising, direct mail fundraising campaign.
So here's a question for you. So you're talking a lot about the funding, which is, you know, mission critical, as you know, to any nonprofit, you know, the money in that actually pays for the impact that's being made out in the world. So you've talked about fundraising, direct mail. We touched a little bit on the internet, like what's available on the internet. But in terms of grants and other types of funding opportunities, how would you recommend somebody goes about looking for those in this day and age?
There are several agencies that you can pay to do that kind of research. And again, then you're having a lot of upfront.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that want you to pay them and they'll take a percentage. That's illegal. Don't do it.
That's good to know.
Yeah. You're not, the IRS doesn't allow that. I wish I was a better arbiter of that, or I'm not that knowledgeable on how to do it. How I did it was I actually got a grant to hire somebody to do grant research, and they did it and found a number of local charitable agencies. Usually what they are is you had a family that made a fortune at something.
Sure.
And they set up a foundation to do charitable giving in your county. But how did you find out they're even there?
Yeah, right.
It might be easier with the internet nowadays to go it alone. I'm not sure. Yeah. But remember, I was doing it in 1990. So yeah. I do want to say that our Meals on Wheels Contra Costa, our number one source of funds is direct mail fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
The second probably is grants. Actually, the second is bequests.
Got
it. Takes years to get that going.
Of course.
And one of the ways you get that going is you always have a newsletter. Goes out a few times a year. It's a lot of work. But you also include a donor envelope in there. And you also include a pitch for people including you in their will. And the reason is you're only sending this out to people who already love you.
Yeah.
And some small percentage of them will leave you in their will.
Yeah.
And you can beg and ask and plead them to let you know if they're leaving you in their will. And they will never do that. And I've never had anybody. And I know other, like the food bank, will knows they have all of this stuff coming. I never have.
That's fascinating.
The whole time I was managing the finance, that was the other thing, was I set myself up as treasurer of my nonprofit, not chairman. I managed the business of it for 30 years, 33 years. And I guess I can hit the punchline here, which is by the time I retired, we were taking in $3 million a year.
Wow.
And we were spending most of it on meals. Our overhead, because we only had two employees who were part-time, but they were really clerical in nature.
Yeah.
Our overhead never exceeded 1%. Our administrative overhead never exceeded 1%, 2%, that area. But we also had donated space,
Sure.
By the way, the county let us have free space.
Sure. That's obviously a huge advantage.
Yeah, it is. And so that kept our administrative overhead down. But our fundraising overhead was high. It came in at about 20. Right now, it comes in at like 24%, something like that. But that's because the cost of printing, the cost
sure.
of mail. We also pay an agency to put together the whole thing.
Sure.
But we send out in our county a 500,000 pieces.
I do have a question for you, though, on what you're sharing. You're bringing in $3 million in revenue, or not revenue, but $3 million in fundraising.
Yeah.
That money is going towards feeding nutritious meals to homebound senior citizens in Contra Costa County in California. It obviously took you a long time to get to that number, get to that mark, and to that level of impact. Knowing everything you know right now, what is the one piece of advice you would give yourself, the early version of yourself, just starting out launching this nonprofit?
Probably get into direct mail sooner.
Wow. Okay.
The curve just goes like that. You know, you're going like this, and all of a sudden it goes.
And for those of you listening, it's an exponential growth that he's drawing with his arm.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we grew at a respectable level and then it really took off. But, you know, it started again. You make a significant investment to get into direct mail. But once you're there, a small percentage of the people that give to you will give again.
Sure.
And one of the tricks is you got to be there when they're ready to give, which means you've got to send multiple pieces per year.
Yeah.
To your donors. Some of them don't want to get multiple pieces per year. And hopefully they'll tell you. And you can say, oh, okay, well, what time of year would you like to hear from us? And you set it up so you know only to send them, you know, if you're doing four letters a year or six, better, the more the merrier. I mean, some of them can be newsletters. You know, I mean, newsletters are called the soft ask.
Yeah.
Theoretically, you're just giving them a newsletter, but you've also included a donor envelope. Newsletters pay for themselves. Part of direct mail fundraising is you have to buy lists of names from a list broker, and you have to kind of guess at what lists of donors in your area would most likely give to you. You know, I mean, it may be if you're working in senior programs, you might want to hit the AARP list. or
right, that makes sense.
Something like that. When I first started, Reader's Digest was a biggie. And it was something that was mainly read by older people.
Sure.
And lo and behold, what Meals on Wheels is looking for in the way of donors is people who are getting on in years. They're either taking care of an older adult, father, mother, or they're getting old enough that they can see themselves needing the help someday.
It sounds like you're looking for that emotional tie to the cause.
Yes. And the other thing is, don't feel you're competing with all the other nonprofits out there. You're not. You're competing with other people doing the same thing you're doing, if there are any. Hopefully there aren't. But you're not really competing with the Children's Foundation or, the local
leukemia hospital. Research or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, those people give what you really want to do. It's the old rising tide lifts all boats, unless they stupidly tied it off too low on the pier. But it swamps all boats. No, rising tide lifts all boats. You want to promote giving. And if you're a worthwhile charity and your name's out there, you'll get your share. But you're not, people would confuse Meals on Wheels with the food bank. But it's not, it's two different functions. And I would never speak ill of the food bank. In fact, the director of the food bank helped me understand how to put together a nonprofit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how dedicated he was. He's retired now. But how dedicated he was to the philosophy that, a rising tide raises all boats. He'll get the people that want to donate to the food bank, and I'll get people that want to serve hot meals. The food bank is mainly groceries,
Right.
And they usually are the number one charity in any area, by the way, as far as fundraising.
I believe that.
But, our director for many years was very, very sharing, helpful. Good guy to know, and he told me what I needed to do. He was the one that first told me about joining a coalition in direct mail fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him outright, how do you put those letters out every couple of months? What, you got a whole room full of people or what? He told me, no, I belong to, we belong to a coalition. And you pay a marketing company to do it.
Love it. So this has been a really phenomenal chat. Like I've hardly asked you any questions compared to a lot of the interviews I do on the show. And it's because you're just giving wisdom here. So I didn't want to interrupt your free flow of thought, but knowing that we have gone over so much in sharing your story and also just some of the juicy nuggets that have supported, your nonprofit in reaching that $3 million mark. If you had to summarize, the pieces that someone with a vision, with a dream, heart's in the right place, really believes in and wants to make an impact in their community, summarizing everything we've gone over today, just bullet points, what are maybe the top three or five things they need to do this week to get it going?
Well, I would research what publications are available. outside of the IRS.
All right.
Then I would go to the IRS website and find out what they have available, because they sure were a wealth of information, although I had to go to the IRS office in those days to get them.
Right.
There was no internet, at least not like it is now. And nonprofit name is critical, as I said. The first word of your name has to say what you do. If you're working with children, it needs to start with children. If you're trying to cure leukemia, leukemia has to be the first word.
Yeah.
People aren't going to look for national or association of.
Right.
They're not going to look for the.
Yeah.
They're looking for the word of what it is you do. For me, it's Meals on Wheels. So everything we do is Meals on Wheels of Contra Costa, not Contra Costa Meals on Wheels. And go for it. You know, I don't get carried away trying to be a business, but be operate business-like. When I say don't get carried away being a business, I'm saying don't staff up before you know. That's what happens to businesses in general. They think they get too big physically before they have the revenue to support it, and don't make it. And we never did staff up very big.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, two employees.
Well, and the other thing was, we never actually had an employee. What we did was we used another nonprofit that was willing to provide us with staff, and we would pay them for the staff we used. And for us, it was perfect, because we only paid for what we needed. And it's a much more complicated thing than that, but it actually worked out very well, rather than hiring people and having downtime and all of that.
So, Dad, I want to thank you for being on this show. I want to thank you for imparting your wisdom. And I think just telling a story that is synonymous with what I think the show is about, which is not necessarily having all the answers, but knowing that there's work to be done to have an impact, make the world a better place, you know, in so far as you feel called to do so, and getting out there and making it happen. And, you know, just to summarize what I got out of everything you said is, again, you said fake it till you make it, asking for support, winning people over to your cause who would help you make the job a little bit lighter for yourself. That old Ben Franklin saying, many hands make light work. And, you know, that plus the little nuggets that you gave along the way, you know, I think were super invaluable. So the very last question I want to ask you, and this is something that I ask everybody on this show, what do you want to acknowledge yourself for?
Overcoming fear. I was scared to death when I was putting this thing together. I was afraid of failure. I was afraid of making a fool out of myself. I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew what we needed to do. And there wasn't anybody around to do it but me. So even though I didn't know a thing about setting up a nonprofit, I knew I had to do it. That took some overcoming the fear of doing it, the fear of failure.
Yeah. Well, Dad, I want to acknowledge you not only for putting up with me and raising me, but I want to acknowledge you for fighting through that fear. And as a result, the hundreds and thousands of people that you helped feed in Contra Costa County, as a result of pushing through your comfort zone, pushing beyond the fear and making it happen. So thank you so much for being on the show. I'm super excited to have everybody listen to this, and hopefully that this brings inspiration to them. And again, folks, if you're wanting to start a nonprofit, I've met hundreds of people in my life who have a dream for a nonprofit. Like, I hope that my dad's example is one that lets you know that you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to start at some point. And so with that said, last thing I want to ask is, where can people learn more about Meals on Wheels and possibly even donate?
Well, Meals on Wheels America, the website of one of the national organizations. And I don't know if that's the best place to donate. I would look for Meals on Wheels in your own neighborhood. You know, your own county, your own city. They're there. They are everywhere in America, I guarantee it.
I love it. Well, Dad, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Take care.